Blind Veterans UK. Optelic, Ben's story. On the 22nd of May 2011, British forces withdrew from Iraq, bringing Operation Telic to an end. Over more than 8 years of conflict, 179 British service personnel lost their lives. Many thousands more returned home with life-changing injuries. Ben, who served in the 3rd Battalion Rifles, was one of them. 5 days before the end of his second tour, his patrol was hit by an IED near Basra, leaving him with catastrophic injuries. As we mark the 15th anniversary of the end of Operation Telic, Ben shares his story. Please note, this episode includes detailed descriptions of injuries that some viewers and listeners may find distressing.
We deployed straight from Cyprus over to there. So we had about 2 months, month and a half, 2 months of the tail end of the invasion, and then it switched over to Telic 1 from there. There was a lot of patrols, like making sure that the infrastructure stayed working well. And then on top of that, it was just doing normal patrols through Azabaya via port and then going up into the city. I mean, the first one was, you know, you get pockets of things, but it wasn't, I wouldn't say it was particularly dangerous. And then obviously we had the break. And then when we went back in 2006, you could tell it had massively escalated. You do an 8-hour patrol, come back in for 4 hours, go back out for 10 hours, come back in for 6 hours, back out for 2 hours, in for 8 hours, back out for 16 hours. It was non-stop. I got injured on the 25th of February 2007, which was 5 days before we were due back. It was just another patrol. The patrol commander went in, got his briefing, was at the front of the wagon, and he was just giving us a quick go over. So he'd sort of go through where we were going to go, point out where we were going. It was a bit of a weird one because I can remember thinking, and I'd never had it before, I was thinking, this is a bit of a odd one. Why does this one feel a bit different? It wasn't fully dark at that point. It was sort of dusk. So we're driving down that road, and then just as you come up to the slip road is where they detonated the IED, and it obviously hit our vehicle. I was driving the lead vehicle. My right arm just below the elbow was shredded down to the bone. A shrapnel goes through my leg just up above my right knee. And then three large bits went into my head. My right eye was destroyed instantly by the blast. And then my left eye, because one of the bits of shrapnel traveled through the top of my mouth, through to my left temple, it cut the underneath of the left eye. So the left eye was leaking fluid. And the other two bits of shrapnel, one stopped just before my brain, and then the other one just missed my jugular by a couple of millimetres. So yeah, pretty lucky. And one of the big things that the militias were doing at that point was not only were they doing secondary attacks, so they would usually have a roadside bomb followed up by small arms fire. They would pick up on what we would do, how we would do it, and they would adjust accordingly. So they would work out how to hit us, when to hit us, and where they would set up a secondary ambush of small arms fire, or where they would set up a secondary IED device. So that was very clearly in my mind that, yeah, this had gone off, but there could be a secondary or tertiary attack. You can't stop, you can't turn around. It was just a case of you just have to drive and get out of the kill zone. So I think I managed about 100 metres down the road to just keeping the vehicle straight. I'd kept on driving and ended up clipping a lorry that was in front, and it ended up flipping my vehicle onto the driver's side. And that's where the rest of the multiple came to a stop and then sort of dealt with what was happening. One of my good mates looked in the vehicle. My head was resting against the glass and there was quite a lot of blood filling up there. So he looked at me and thought, with that much blood, I must be dead. But then he said, I just looked up at him and went, you all right, mate? So he's like, oh, right, okay. So then they just started yanking me out of the wagon as quick as they could. And then the next thing I hear was loads of bangs. And I remember looking up and the guys that were on top cover, they must have been coming under fire because they were firing off a load of rounds everywhere. But I don't think I'd fully acknowledge what happened then. I remember the right side of my face felt really breezy. I touched the side of my face and I could feel my bottom teeth and I was like, that's weird. And I remember getting my finger and then just poking it through and touching my tongue. And I was like, wow. And then my mate Phil just grabbed my hand and was like, no, don't do that, don't do that. And I was like, oh my God, okay, this is pretty bad. And then the next thing I remember is as we were coming into Basra Airfield, where the field hospital is, I can remember the vehicle skidding to a halt and hearing loads and loads of noise. Obviously, the other lads just getting me off the back of the wagon. And then taking me into the field hospital, it was completely quiet in the room. I couldn't tell that there was anybody else in the room. All I could hear was Steve and Johnny sort of saying, like, put him down, lower him down carefully. And the second that my head hit the bed, it just this eruption of noise of all these people. And it kind of shocked me. And it was just people talking absolutely everywhere, just left, right, and center. I could hear the scissors cutting all my kit. I could hear the Velcro on the body armor getting ripped off and the plate getting thrown and it making a huge clunk on the metal floors. Really huge amount of noise. And then faded out from that point. It was when the first 12 hours of me getting injured that they needed to get me up to Ballard, which is where the main American field hospital is. I couldn't be flown high altitude at that point, so I basically had to be CASEVAC'd up to Ballard via Merlin on low-level flight all the way up there. The Americans obviously looked at my eye and they determined that I'd lost way too much fluids in the left eye. And they could see that the eye was slowly dying. They didn't know what the time period would be, but I would eventually lose the eye because it was definitely dying. And it was also an infection risk. But at the same time, I had huge injuries to my arm. So they were trying to save my arm at the same time. They removed both eyes. So they were totally focusing on the arm, which I'm glad they did. They had removed two bits of shrapnel from my head, the one that was in my temple and the one that had been near my jugular. But the bit of shrapnel that was close to my brain, they didn't want to touch that until they got an absolutely clear picture, which they were unable to do because they didn't have the CT equipment there. So they CASEVAC'd me over to Ramstein, where they would be able to do the CTs and actually then get the final bit of shrapnel away from my brain. For me, at this point, the first thing that I fully remember was with the Americans. I don't know if it was just a dream or actual reality. I couldn't see anything, just couldn't move at all at that point. And I remember hearing two voices at the end of my bed. I just remember the male person saying, we'll give him a couple more units of blood. And I remember thinking, oh God, I wonder if they know my blood group. And I was really worried about that. I couldn't talk, barely move. But then I realized on my left hand, I can move my index finger. So then with my index finger, I started doing OPOS on the bed. I did it the first time and there was nothing from them. I did it again, still nothing, kept talking. I was, oh God, come on. And I did it again. And then I remember the female going, did you see that? I remember thinking, are they talking about me? So I quickly did it again. And then they just both like chuckled. So I did it again. And then I remember the male voice going, he chuckled and he said, yes, we know, Ben, we know. He said, it's really, really good to hear from you. And then I passed out. And only later did I understand, because of the extent of my head injuries, and because I really hadn't had much communication, movement, or anything up to that point, they didn't know whether the injuries to my brain had been so severe that essentially there would be any brain activity. So me hearing them communicating and responding was kind of like a cue that everything was sort of working okay up there. They had to fix my skull, is pretty much the shrapnel and the blast had shattered the entirety of the front of my skull. So there was really extensive restructure work that needed to be done. I think it was about a 14-hour surgery. They cut from ear to ear and peeled my face off and then rebuilt my skull that way so it would leave no more facial scarring. So later on, he came to me and he said, oh, can have your permission to use all the pictures and everything in a medical journal. And then it will go in the medical journal for the British Medical Association and everything. So that was pretty cool. When I was on the high dependency ward in Sallyoke, the ophthalmologist had come to speak to me. And at this point, I had cotton pads over my eyes. So I hadn't really got it. My jaw was wired just in case I had any lower jaw fractures. So I was a little bit limited with my speech. I said to him, oh, so will I see anything at all? And he said, no, we had to remove both of your eyes, Ben. And I think I was upset for like 20 seconds. I thought, oh shit, I'll not be able to drive. I'll not be able to play computer games. I remember thinking, oh, well, there's nothing you can do about it now, is there really? It's just the way it is. And that was really it, because it's a I don't know. I mean, it's part of the job. I've always seen it as if I got annoyed at my injuries, I would just be getting annoyed at myself because, you know, I join the army and we're not joining the Boy Scouts, you know, it has real consequences. If it hadn't been me, it would have been one of my mates. And it's just, you know, like there's no way I would have ever have wanted my mates in the vehicle to have what I had. After I got back home, there were places going on about rehab, but at that point for me, I wasn't interested. I had been away from home for just over a year, and then obviously hadn't been back home and been injured. I just wanted to be left alone at that point, just to get back home and just to recover. I was just a bit resilient at going away and so on. And I think it was when my wife got pregnant with our son, I was like, right, I need to get some training done. I knew from others at that point, Blind Veterans UK did more intensive stuff. So that's where I got in contact with them and said, look, I need to do stuff on cooking, independent living. Just, I need to bomber straight into it and get it done because, you know, our son's due. The first time I went down there, I stayed in the main building. And then I learned about the independent living skills building, which for me fitted me better. So every single time I went after then, I just wanted to stay in the ILS building. So whatever I was doing, I just sort of had to live by myself and I could practice stuff, do stuff. It was just really, really good to sort of like get there, get practicing on the bits and know that I could go back home and do those sort of bits and pieces for the kids and that, and it would be safe in doing so. You know, being able to get bits of kit as well that would help out, a kit that I wouldn't know about, like talking scales. I wouldn't have the first clue where to get them from. I would say bits like that when the scales talk back to you. It was... Do you know what I mean? It's just talking scales. But it was like, my God, that's amazing. It was pretty good because it was time to get away as well. So it'd give me a bit of a break. It'd also give my wife a bit of a break as well. I think one of the things that's kind of forgotten is a lot of us, especially those of us that get injured, where we do sort of need that sort of care. Coming from the forces, our sort of relationships. I mean, I met my wife when I was in the army. Our relationships are built on the basis of going away quite a bit. So to go from that to getting injured and pretty much being with each other 24/7 puts huge amounts of pressure. Having that sort of downtime where you can have not just her have rest as a carer, but also just have a bit of a break from each other in somewhere that's, you know, that she knows is safe for me at the time of it being so early on. That was really, really helpful because especially back at that point, it's having that trust in people to look after me, knowing my injuries. But she was able to do that when I would go away there because obviously that's what they specialise in. Beginning of 2018, I picked back up in snowboarding. And we progressed it to the point where at the beginning of 2020, we went to Poland, and it's known as the European Paralympics, but I won gold there in the blind gated slalom. So that was really, really good. I do a lot of stuff with computers, computer games and so on. So I've worked with companies like Corsair, NZXT and MSI on the accessibility in their software. I've also worked with Blizzard Entertainment on a couple of their games and the accessibility in their games. So World of Warcraft, Diablo 4. So yeah, I enjoy that sort of stuff. Because like I said, back when I lost my sight, you know, two things that I enjoyed doing was playing on computer games and driving cars. And they were two of the things where losing your sight has the biggest impact. I did do the Ferrari drive the day before my wedding, so I'd already done that one. The computer games has been an ongoing thing, and accessibility within the PC space and software and games and so on is just massively improving. And I think aside from that, I haven't done anything massively spectacular, but I've just been fortunately in the sort of position where, you know, could just enjoy seeing my kids every day growing up. My main aim, once the kids are out of primary school and they're off doing their bits and pieces, definitely want to go back into education, learn coding, and then get into coding in the sort of gaming space so that I can I can get the accessibility in there myself. So yeah, that's what I want to do for the future.
Go to blindveterans.org.uk and do it today.